All right, thank you for that. It is 9:40 on a Tuesday. That's when we go to our friends at SailSportsTalk.com. And that is a segment once a week that is co-hosted with Karen Lyle that I do. Karen, how are you?
Well, I am doing really great. I have an opportunity today to interview a sailor that I have never thought that I would be interviewing you, and that is you.
All right, go away. Interview me, y'all.
Okay, so you went out on the Jeremiah O'Brien this last weekend, and tell us a little bit about that adventure that you went on. Where did you go, first of all?
All right, so the Jeremiah O'Brien is the last remaining Liberty ship, of which there were more than 2,000 built in World War II, and they kept pumping them out on the East Coast, and it was to bring materiel and also troops back and forth. The Jeremiah O'Brien, most of these were melted down and sold for scrap metal to Asia after the war, but the Jeremiah O'Brien was actually a D-Day plus 13, so that would be June 19th, 1944. So it's an actual working vessel from World War II, and once a year, for a day, they take it out. And what I didn't realize, they take it out, and they also have some burials at sea, not corpses, but ashes that are scattered as well. But it's $145 a person, and because I had the guy on my show, he was nice enough to give me a comp. And so we showed up over at Pier 35, and it was absolutely freezing. Wind blowing, and the most freezing part was waiting to leave. We did not. We're supposed to disembark at 10. We didn't leave till 10:43. It pulls you, and it's a very, very crowded vessel, but it pulls you out from these two tugboats, and then you're off. And then it starts getting, I don't know, I'd probably say it's going about 12 knots. It had a nice little speed. Went out past the Golden Gate. Then it killed its engines, and we were adrift for about a half hour, and I think that's when they were having the ceremonies to have the burials at sea. But there was bagpipes. There was also a little jazz band playing some old-time tunes from the 40s and 50s. There were free donuts, free boiled hot dogs, and free drinks, booze and beer and wine. And all in all, it was about, I guess, a little over 3 hours was the tour. Oh, then on the way back in, we went underneath the Bay Bridge. The Giants were, and I think they were like in the bottom of the second inning. You could see people there at Oracle Park, and they blew the old steam horn. The most fascinating thing for me was going down into the engine room. And at first, there was like a 15-minute line, and I thought, well, I got nothing else to do. But you go down there and you see these massive pistons, like 10 feet high, going really fast. And then there are all these different boilers, and it's really hot down there, even though it's freezing on the outside. But it just makes you think about, in, you know, World War II, let's say if a wolf pack of U-boats were after you, or you're getting attacked by the air, there's someone up top trying to sink you, and here you are five decks down, you know, covered in oil and grease and all that. So it just makes you appreciate more and more. But it is cool. The thing still works, which is great after, you know, a long, long time.
Well, that is amazing. I am just so thrilled to hear that you went out on this voyage. And it was also in favor of veterans, and that's a very timely subject at any time. Mm-hmm. And you have, I mean, when you were out there, was there anyone in particular you were thinking about on that ship during those ceremonies?
Yes. I always think about my dad, who was a Navy officer, as a lieutenant commander, and my dad is buried in a military cemetery. My mom received the folded flag and everything, but, you know, he was not, I only remember him from his days in the reserves when I was a little kid. But growing up, before Bill Clinton closed all the military bases in the Bay Area, we would go sometimes to a BOQ or an Oaks Club, and we'd have pancake breakfasts on the USS Carl Vinson or some other carrier that might happen to be in town. Sometimes the Enterprise would come into Alameda. And so growing up, going to Treasure Island, where, you know, my dad would show his ID and the Marine would stand up straight and salute him. I mean, it was, I thought about him, you know, and I did get to take him before he passed away a few years ago. I took him to the Hornet, which is a Essex class wood deck carrier that's in Alameda. It's now a museum as well. And the original Hornet sank in World War II, but that's the second Hornet. That's the one that picked up the astronauts after a mission. So to answer your question, I thought about my dad mostly.
Well, yes, I'm very, very fortunate. My dad is still living, and I had an opportunity to go with him to on Mother's Day with my dad and stepmom. And, you know, every moment you have with your dad is just precious. And I remember my grandfather was he was in World War One, and he died when I was 16, and that was something that I've never ever forgotten. And I think that you just always remember you know, your parents when they're passed away. So tell me, Rick, when you had this experience to go out on this beautiful ship and you were looking at the game from the water, how did that strike you?
Looking at the what from the water?
The game from the water and all the audience. And you weren't able to see it, but you were able to hear the crowd cheering.
Oh, the Giants game. Well, that was very brief. That was kind of cool to get that perspective from the waves. But, you know, you get San Francisco is, the San Francisco Bay anyway, is spectacular. And so you get a really close-up view of Alcatraz, of Treasure Island, both bridges, as I mentioned. You go past the Presidio and Chrissy Field and Palace of Fine Arts. You know, that old Pan Pacific exhibition, there were a dozen of those domed buildings, and they tore down all of them but one. And, you know, and then seals were, like, swimming alongside. And it makes you appreciate sometimes that, you know, we live in, and this is something you take advantage of, we live in such a strong maritime heavy area, and we almost never get out on the water. So, you know, you see Angel Island and Marin. It's all very, very, very pretty.
Well, and one of the things I think I enjoy the most about going out in the bay is that you do feel like that you're far away from the land, even though you might be only a half an hour sail back to shore. It's a different world, isn't it?
Yeah, I always, whenever I take off from SFO or Oakland and I turn over the bay, that's when you really get to see how enormo San Francisco and San Pablo Bays are. Because you kind of think, I drive over the bridge and in a couple minutes I'm in San Francisco. But they're massive, and it's just, once you're out there, you're right. You feel like you're far away from everything.
Well, having grown up as a powerboat daughter, my dad was a powerboater up in the Delta. I think the first time that I went out on a sailboat in the bay was in 2005 when my business partner took me out on a 26-foot sailboat, and the engines went off, and I was out there, you know, in the middle of the bay, and I just went, wow, I should have been doing this all my life. And I just had a marvelous experience with it, which is what led me to be sailing. So I'm going to ask you, Rick, does this mean that you might go out on a boat again?
Well, I always had an affinity for it when I was a kid because I would go fishing a lot on the bay, and when I was in high school, my dad had a friend who had a cool little power fishing boat that he would let me and my little brother steer, and we would go out and we would fish for sturgeon and go up the Delta. The thing that I'm not interested in is sailboats. I don't want anything where I have to pull up a sail and be, you know, at the mercy of the wind. I was watching from the Jeremiah O'Brien these sailboats going around, and some of them were almost at a 45 degree angle sideways, and I just if it has a steering wheel, if the helm, in other words, if I can drive it like a car, I'm all in, Karen.
Well, that's okay. You know, there's always this little competition between power boaters and sailboaters, you know, as far as which one they prefer. I happen to like both of them, and I think riding a power boat is is a lot of fun. I'm kind of with my dad that the speed is a high in itself, you know, especially if you get out there planing and things like that. Uh-huh. You know, it can be good. So I'm gonna say that's okay.
Yeah, well, I also got to see. Uh-huh.
But you are a fisherman, so what's your favorite fish to clean?
Well, I would probably say like a rainbow trout is the easiest one to clean. Yeah, I mean that's a lot of the freshwater ones are the easiest ones to clean. The really bad experience I remember having in high school is that when we were fishing in San Pablo Bay, which is muddy waters, that you'd get a lot of these brown smoothhound sharks, and they were only about 1 to 2 feet long, but they'd get up on the boat and they would be going crazy, and they're just big enough to look like if they bit you, it would really hurt. So we had these little clubs. They looked like these little police batons, and we would have to beat the sharks to death, and there's blood everywhere, and I'll never forget, this is rated R radio almost, but I'll never forget, I hit one in the head, and both of his eyes popped out, and I don't think I'll ever forget them. Then you throw them in the water, and they're just chum for the other shark. So it's not all fun and games, and this is the thing, because I'm such a sweetheart darling, I did feel sorry for the sharks I was killing.
Yeah, I can see that. We accidentally caught a nun shark up in the British Virgin Islands, and it was about that size and about that violent. I mean, we were able to get the hook out and release it because we didn't want to eat it, but you know, it was. I can see what you mean. I don't know. That would probably not be one of my favorite, most appetizing things to do.
I remember when we caught a really big one, and we thought we would save the jaws, you know. And I can tell you, and it's unbelievable, the shark skin was like cement. Like the knife wouldn't even cut through it. I think you would need a chainsaw. It was very surprising.
Wow, I didn't know that about the shark skin.
Ooh, yeah. Well, we're here for all your shark skin stuff. Anyway, Karen, thanks for letting me be a guest on SailSportsTalk.com.
Well, Rick, it was a pleasure to have you represent the Jeremiah O'Brien and the Powerboat Lovers. This is a good thing. Thank you, Rick.
And by the way, I do love big, tall sailing boats. I'm just, you know, I think they're really, really cool. I need to have a motor.
That's okay.
All right.
It's all good.
All right. All right, Karen, thanks. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Sounds great.